Bitcoin and then the Lightning Network enables just so much in terms of individuals who have a skill set to earn an income from anywhere throughout the world. And
welcome to the Bitcoin Talent Co. podcast, where we interview entry-level to C-level executives about working in the Bitcoin industry. Learn about their interview process, what they do day-to-day at their Bitcoin job, and advice for current job seekers looking to work full-time in Bitcoin. Hope you enjoy. My guest today is Kenny DiGiulio, who is the Director of Education at Inflection Points. He helps people understand the difference between crypto and Bitcoin, and also has helped over 200 people transition full-time to work in the industry. So I thought it'd be a really good idea to have Kenny on the show, give some insights and advice on his career path into the Bitcoin industry, and what he sees is working for others to also transition their careers in the industry. So let's get started. Hello and welcome to the Bitcoin Talent Co. podcast. I'm your host, Eric Podwaski, and today I'm joined by my friend, Kenny DiGiulio, who is the Director of Education at Inflection Points. Kenny, thanks for joining me.
Yo, what's up, my brother? So happy to be here with you.
Yeah, thanks for joining me. So Kenny currently works for, for more of a crypto company more broadly, but he's secretly orange-pilling everyone that comes into their eyesight here. So I really wanted to pick his brain on how he's doing that, as well as getting into the Bitcoin industry, what he was doing before that, and the transition into Bitcoin. So let's get started here. Before Bitcoin entered your life, what were you doing professionally?
Yeah, so I'm guessing most people won't know, me and EPOD, I call him because that's what I've always called him, went to college together. We were in the same fraternity. So you were a freshman when I was a senior, I think?
Yeah,
is that the age difference?
Yeah.
And so we both went to Penn State. We were both in the same fraternity. And so I started at Penn State in 2011. The like probably third week I was on campus, there's this place called Lion Tutors. And so the idea behind Lion Tutors is nobody goes to class at Penn State. And so there's like 20 to 25 of these intro classes. So think like calculus, biology, chemistry, econ, all of those things, stats.
Yep.
And so I was in Econ 102, didn't even show up to the first day of class my freshman year. And some of the older guys I was friends with pulled me, they go, yeah, we got to go to this Lion Tutors place. We're going to sit there for 4 or 5 hours. You're going to learn everything that you need to know for the exam. It's like $50. So I go there. There's this guy up in front of the room. His name's Josh. He's teaching us about econ. Like 2 hours into the review, he just goes off on a tangent about how he took mushrooms the other day and he's so grateful for all of us and he's so happy that he has such an amazing business and this crazy rant, and then he just goes back to talking about econ. So I introduced myself to him, end up working there almost immediately, and so I worked at this place, Lion Tutors, all throughout college. And so I was given these huge exam reviews in front of like 200, 300 college students. And that's what I did all throughout college. And so I was teaching finance, accounting.
It's a tutor,
but instead of one-to-one. So like most people, when they think of tutoring, they're thinking of private tutoring. This is one-to-many. And so what we did is we had semesters and semesters worth of exams. And so finance was one of the, like the class that I really specialized in tutoring. I did others like accounting, but finance is like really my bread and butter. And so I had like 25 semesters worth, or actually probably more like 30 semesters worth of these finance exams. And so we would create these huge like 50, 60, 70 page exam review packets. And so the way that it would go is we would take a concept, say like, all right, this is present value. And we'd have a couple pages about what present value is. And then we'd say, all right, when a question about present value comes up on the exam, there's gonna be two of them. There's five different ways that they can show up. Let's run through all of the scenarios and the different ways that we can trick you. And so I would be up in front of the room for like 4 or 5, 5.5 hours giving these exam reviews. And so it was kind of crazy because I didn't realize that I was getting really good at public speaking because I was a college student and it was kind of weird. Like I was like partying with a lot of the people that I ended up teaching at these exam reviews and stuff like that. And so I did that for, 20 plus hours a week all throughout being in college. And so in the summers, like most people do, I did some internships. In between my junior and senior year, I did a consulting internship with PwC. I was in New York, and so I got a place with all my boys. I thought it was going to be like the best summer ever. I show up to the first day of the internship. They go, yo, your project is in Salt Lake City, Utah. And so every Monday morning, I was getting on a plane, going to Salt Lake, working in a like a Mormon bank in a conference room all day, and then I'd be back Thursday night, party my ass off all weekend, and do the same thing over again. Basically, I hated it. And so kind of my influences at the time in high school and college were like Tim Ferriss, 4-Hour Work Week, and I met the team from Lion Tutors. They're 10 years older than me, so they were like young enough to kind of get me and understand me as a college student, but old enough to kind of be my mentors. And so I kind of did a couple of these internships. I had one previously at a financial services firm doing like financial advisory type stuff. And I just couldn't see myself buttoned up in an office. I mean, you've known me for long enough. Like, I'm just not that person. And so I decided to, we had this concept that worked really well at Penn State for Lion Tutors. We said, what if we franchise this thing? What if at 10, 15, 20 different universities all throughout the nation, we can have a Lion Tutors, right? We know that it works here. Let's do a test and prove to ourselves that it works somewhere else. And then we can sell this thing globally. And so when I graduated, I stayed at Penn State for a year. I ended up meeting my wife that year, so it was a really good year. And then I moved my ass out all by myself to East Lansing, Michigan. And so this was kind of summer 2016 heading into 2017. And I started that business out there. And so that's really, so like kind of when you think of it, like the only thing I've ever done is develop educational resources and build these kind of small to medium-sized early-stage education businesses. And so I pretty much worked on Lion Tutors for almost 10 years, if you count the entire time I was in college and then after that. And then I left officially in November 2021 full-time, and I've been working with Pomp and the team at Inflection Points ever since. But kind of the 8 months or so leading up to that, I had my full-time gig at Lion Tutors, and I was working part-time with Pomp and the crew, which I'm sure we'll talk a lot more about.
Yeah, for sure. Before we get to there and what you're doing now, I want to hear about your Bitcoin story. Where does that come into play? Before you start, I actually got into Bitcoin through Penn State. There was a blockchain club, right? Was that there? I'm sure it was there. Did you know it was there?
So the blockchain club wasn't there, but there was a Bitcoin club that was super small in around 2013, and then that got disbanded, and then it started up multiple times, but it's always kind of fallen apart, as these clubs tend to do.
I remember hearing rumors when I first attended this blockchain club that people years back started this Bitcoin club, and they actually had wallets filled with many Bitcoin in them that they lost access to. So there's always like there's a secret like hunt for like who can on campus get access to these wallets and get thousands of dollars, whatever it may be at that time. It was a good way for me to get into Bitcoin. Unfortunately, when I showed up, they were showing Ethereum and how that worked.
So
the crypto rabbit hole before I got back into Bitcoin. But yeah, turn it back over to you. What's your story here with Bitcoin?
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of funny because you know a lot of these people. And so at Lion Tutors, the really interesting thing about the business is we had to acquire new customers every year, right? Because you have college students. Really, the classes that they took where they were our customers was really freshman and sophomore classes. And so we had to acquire new customers every year, and we had to do it really, really quickly. And so we thought a lot about the way that we approach marketing. And so someone who I read a lot of is Seth Godin. I'm not sure if you know, he's kind of like this marketing guru guy. He has a bunch of books. I don't remember which book it was from, but it's kind of this idea of like, if you touch someone in three different ways effectively, your marketing becomes like exponentially more effective. And so so you got to think, this is 2011, 2012, 2013. This is like the very early days of Facebook marketing. So we were really ahead of the curve at Lion Tutors with Facebook marketing and a lot of this digital stuff. And so what we found is if we were running Facebook ads like crazy and we had a huge budget, and that was the only thing that we were doing, like it was pretty effective, but you know, it wasn't great. If we had the Facebook ads and we made sure that we were hitting all the fraternities and that the older students, so the juniors and seniors who had already been our customers who kind of aged out, if they were telling the freshmen and sophomores about us, so word of mouth and digital marketing, it was way more effective. But then we saw if we had the digital marketing, we had the word of mouth, and we had people outside of every single class handing out flyers, so kind of called guerrilla marketing, it was unstoppable, right? Like. Yeah. If you look at Penn State, like these classes, let's just say there's like the intro to finance class, they have like 1,000 people in there. in certain years, we were pulling 500 to 600 of them were coming out to our exam reviews. And so, like, the marketing was incredibly effective. And so what I found with Bitcoin is, for whatever reason, I think because it's this weird, counterintuitive, interdisciplinary thing, the same thing is true. Like, you kind of have to go through it two or three times before you really understand it, right? And so for me, the first was, remember, I was studying finance, so fiat, like, you know, I was in the trading room all day, every day. I was friends with a bunch of people who on the Nittany Lion Fund, who is this kind of like student-managed hedge fund. You know, everyone was trying to get investment banking internships, sales and trading internships, all of that. So, like, that's really where my head was at during these days. So it was my junior year, and we all lived in the fraternity house, and there were a couple of guys who got involved with this, like, straight-up Ponzi pyramid scheme. It was more of, like, a pyramid scheme. It was called Vima, Verve, something like that. Do you remember that? It was, like, these, like, horrible energy drinks.
Okay.
Right? And so two of the guys were, like, on the bottom – very close to the bottom floor of this Ponzi scheme, or I guess it's a pyramid scheme technically, right? Like, because they had products, like, it wasn't like totally fugazi. And so they were making like a shitload of money. Like, for college students, it was like crazy, like, you know, $20,000-$30,000+ a month. And so then they started on Mt. Gox day trading Bitcoin from their fraternity room thing. Like, I remember walking in, my one buddy, you'd just be drinking like a fifth of Ciroc, day trading Bitcoin. And I'm like, you are an idiot, dude. This is bullshit. this thing is a scam. This is like 2013, I guess. Okay. I was a junior, so 2013, 2014 time. But like, I definitely remember it was Mt. Gox when that was happening. Idiot, it's a scam. I know everything, right? Efficient markets, all the stuff. And then that was basically it for my first time. Then when I was in East Lansing all by myself, I worked for 10, 12, 14 hours a day. And then I just sat there and like read or like watched. Like, I was like in the middle of Michigan. It was the middle of winter. It was freezing. And so I was really just like reading everything, mostly focused on like, how do you build businesses? How do you make money? And I spent a good bit of time on the Bitcoin Reddit. Like, that's where people were at that time. And so figure it was like, you know, 2016, 2017 time, the block size war was going on. I was really trying to wrap my head around things. But, you know, as you know, like, there weren't, this was probably around the time you were first getting into Bitcoin too, I think. Like, there wasn't nearly the amount of podcasts and books. And I think that was actually a good thing because you had to figure stuff out for yourself. But I had my hands full with this business. I never bought Bitcoin at that time, but I got kind of bit by the bug. And then, so I vividly remember when I would kind of like call myself a Bitcoiner, and when I first bought Bitcoin, was, you can probably look up the dates. It was in 2018. I think it was like in the springtime. I don't remember the order, but it was like within a week or two of one another. Vijay Boyapati put out his article, The Bullish Case for Bitcoin. It was like a Medium article at the time. It's now I've been since turning into a book. And then the Bitcoin Standard came out by Saifedean in like the same like month, like whatever, people can look up the dates. And then it hit me. And I understood it for the first time for real. Like, you know, we all kind of remember that feeling of just being like mind blown. A lot of people say the same thing, like went and took a walk and, you know, all that stuff. And then kind of from there, I've been obsessed with Bitcoin. And so I would say that we'll get into this more, I'm sure. But like, it was a solo journey for a really long time. So I would say basically from that point to sometime in 2020, mid 2020, that was like a real issue for me. It was like, I had these ideas, that were rattling around in my head and I had nobody to talk to about it. I didn't know kind of how to do it. And so that kind of is a lot of what informs what I do now. Was I vividly remember having that problem and it like sucking. Right?
Yeah. So. Yeah.
Hey guys, real quick, as a Bitcoin focused recruiting firm, our goal at Bitcoin Talent Co. is to bring as many professionals into the Bitcoin industry as possible. Since we don't run ads, our one ask is to rate, review, and share this podcast with friends and family so more people can find this show. Thanks, and now back to the interview.
So, okay, so you're at Lion Tutors, maybe like 2020-ish or so, 2021. And you have this Bitcoin thing in the back of your mind, slowly taking over your mind like it's done to many of us. Was there an inflection point, to use your company? Was there a moment when you were like, okay, I need to dedicate my career, or at least work in the Bitcoin space, and leave traditional education space, Lion Tutors?
No. So like my gig at Lion Tutors was unbelievable. Like I had a pretty big, like all college students work for us, but between the staff and the tutors, you know, we had 50, 70 plus people working for us. I lived in Philly. I would travel every so often back to State College. Mm-hmm. I love teaching, like still, like I really still miss being up in front of a room of college students, making them laugh their ass off, talking shit about finance. It's like, right. I really love that. So I love this. So like doing something else wasn't even really on my radar, but the problem that I had, it was like, I needed other Bitcoiners to talk with. And so if you think about that time, you were actually the person that got me on Clubhouse initially, if you remember. So like, you can kind of, again, like look at the timeline. This is like, even still, I'm like not huge on Twitter. I'm just kind of private. I don't like being the addiction to it. And so right. like, that wasn't great for me. Clubhouse was new. Twitter Spaces didn't exist. And so like, I just didn't know how to connect with Bitcoiners. As you know, meetups in Philly, it's the crypto shit. And so it's like, I'm not interested in that. And so that's how I initially met Pomp is he posted something like, hey, I'm going to try something new. I'm going to do this kind of like cohort based thing. If you want to meet other Bitcoiners, if you want to potentially transition into the industry, like let me know. And, you know, we're going to do like a beta cohort, whatever.
Yeah, that sounds perfect for you.
And I was like, you know what? Why not? Right. Yeah. It's not that much money. And like, if I can make a couple friends that are willing to like hop on Zoom and talk with me about Bitcoin once a week, like it would be worth the price of admission on its own. And yeah. So that was really what I wanted is I'm thinking about this thing all the time. I don't really have anyone to flesh these ideas out with. That was kind of like the dimension I felt like I wanted to add to my life. And then everything mm-hmm. else from a career perspective comes downstream. But I think that's essentially what happens to everyone more or less is you have kind of your fiat life and yep. then you have your Bitcoin life. And eventually your Bitcoin life ends up taking more and more and more and more of the capacity. And at a certain point, you look at it critically and you go like, all right, it's kind of silly now if I don't make the leap. All right, so that's more so what happened to me.
Gotcha. Okay. So, all right, now your foot's in the door, I guess. You're meeting other people interested in crypto more broadly, maybe some Bitcoiners too, building your network. How do you get involved now working for Pomp and Inflection Points in the crypto course? Is there a typical
so
job
at here? This point, an
interview process?
Yeah, it's kind of funny. So at this point, so like, timeline wise, and I'll probably be off like by a month or two, but it'll be good enough.
Yeah.
I think I went through, so Pomp started Inflection Points in January of 2021. And so okay. the first thing that they did was the job marketplace, Pomp Crypto Jobs. It was basically this thing of a bunch of his portfolio companies, other connections he has throughout the industry were like, listen, we're trying to scale from, you know, 20 people to 200, something like that. Like this was the same time where Coinbase was going from like 1,000 to 5,000. They eventually ended up scaling back down, but they did mm-hmm. scale up. And so, you know, a lot of people were reaching out to him. He's like, all right, I'm just going to build this job marketplace. And so that was the first thing. The second thing that he decided to do was this cohort-based training program. And so that was in like January, February of 21. And so that's the one that I went through. And, you know, I had this background in developing educational content, building these really early stage kind of tutoring, learning, education companies. And so when I went through, the program was really like Zoom calls with Pomp. We had a community that we had through Slack. There were some assignments, and that was really it. And so as I was going through, I kept saying there was a guy who was helping Pomp at the time. His name is Bo Meek. And I kept hitting him up and I said, listen, bro, I have all these ideas. Like, just listen to me, man. Like, I got good experience. I got all these ideas. Like, yeah, for sure. And then so it was like, January, February, winter in Philly. I had like an open Sunday and I'm like, yo, you know what? I'm going to just take all the stuff I've been saying I'm going to do and I'm just going to do it. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I took like probably 10, 12 hours. And I was just in my office, like football was on, whatever. And for all of the workshops in the program, I created these like 15-page study guides for each of them. And so it was like, read this before. Okay, here are all the key terms and the associated definitions. Here's a little quiz. Here's all like a bunch of stuff that you should read post. And it was like cool for me because like you, I know for a fact, because I've seen your like crazy resource stuff that you make for yourself. Like, we all have these, whether it's an Evernote or just in right. like a Google Doc. Like, we're just accumulating this shit. It's like our to read and to listen to list, and like it never mm-hmm. gets smaller, no matter how much you consume. Yeah. And so for me, it was an exercise of like formalizing that. Like, I had all this stuff from years and years of reading and paying attention to this stuff, and like kind of indexing it and categorizing it. And so I just did it. And so I sent it to the guy, Bomeek, and I'm like, yo, told you I can do this. Like, isn't this awesome? No response. send again. Hey, man, just making sure you got this. Mm-hmm. Eventually, I got in touch with him through, like, sheer persistence. I guess it was, like, one of those weird scenarios if you had, like, you know, multiple Slack accounts or something, and I guess I was sending it to the wrong one. And then so he sees it, and he's like, holy shit, this is really awesome. Like, let's talk more.
Yep.
And then I ended up coming on part-time. I worked on part-time for a couple months, and then I eventually ended up coming on full-time just to lead the retail training program, the Crypto Academy mm-hmm. program. But so it was one of these things of, like, so many of us get obsessed with, I need to make my resume perfect. I need to approach networking the right way. But what a lot of us forget, and I know that you've done a lot of stuff like this too, is if you can provide value for somebody, even if you're going to strike out 9 out of 10 times, if you have a lot of conviction and you really feel like you want to work with someone and you really feel like your skill set, you have something valuable to add, a strategy that's worked for a lot of people is do the job before you get there, mm-hmm. send it, full send. Chances are you're never going to hear back from, it could be 5 out of 10, it could be 9 out of 10, whatever, but you know, that's a really, it's kind of, you can think of it as like this really low probability, super high leverage approach. And so I wasn't thinking of it in those terms. Like, I just had a free Sunday and it was something I wanted to do anyway. Yeah. And so that's basically how that happened. And then now, having seen so many people go through our program, we've known it for 2.5 years now. We've had like 2,500 people go through, a little over 200 people just from the training program alone have gotten jobs. And yeah. so, looking at the way a lot of those people have gotten jobs, not that many of them got it from career page, submit applications. That doesn't really happen. Right. Most of them are these kind of networking, friendships, do the job before you get there type scenarios. And you know this, and I'm sure a lot of people that will be watching know this, but it's really important to make sure that you keep that front of mind when you're looking for a job.
Yeah, I absolutely love that. And I think it's spot on. That's how job seekers should be pursuing jobs in this current market, is take your existing skill set, right?
Yep.
Look at companies you want to work for, figure out ways you can add value, do that. And like in your case, that would be putting together these guides on resources and then just present it to them. And mm-hmm. no strings attached, say, hey, I made this for you. You want more of this? Like, we could talk about setting up some kind of a pay structure, right? If not, that's fine. Mm-hmm. I just added someone else to my network. Great.
So exactly. I really love that. I think the key there, Eric, is don't have any expectations with it. Nobody owes exactly. you anything.
Right.
If you do it from a spirit of like, I don't know, sound corny, but like abundance and like, hey, I don't expect anything. I just thought this was really cool and I'm that type of person. That's the way it comes through. And so, if you think about any type of role, I mean, look, if you're an engineer, if you're technical, it's easy. Like, you can either code or you're not. Show me your open source contributions. Show me what you've built. Like, that's pretty mm-hmm. straightforward. It becomes a little bit more abstract with non-technical roles. But if you're a salesperson, take a look at the way that the company is currently approaching sales. Come up with a strategy that you think would be better, a higher leverage, and say, hey, here's a slide deck. I created this sales strategy. I'd love to walk you through it. If you're someone who you're a marketing person, you say, hey, an area that you're neglecting is growth marketing. I have a ton of experience in growth marketing. Here's a list of 10 things that you can do. And I actually went and built a little mock prototype website. And so like, if this is interesting to you, awesome, let's chat. If not, no big deal. And right. so I think like that attitude is really the important part.
I completely agree. And then I actually recall this time period now when you were taking the first cohort as like, I guess you guys kind of like the beta testers for this.
That's what
but
it was.
I also remember you calling me a couple of different times and you were like, yo, I'm about to talk to Pomp about working with him. Mm-hmm. And I remember you being like a little freaked out, like not knowing how to approach the conversation. How do you convince him that he should hire you and you guys should work together? So can you just talk through like, what was that like? How do you prepare for that? What was your pitch to him? Is there any formal interview process associated with it, or just a phone call?
Yeah. So I do remember the one time exactly. I remember where I was driving when I called you. I don't know why, but I did. Uh-huh. It was like on Broad Street in Philly. That's funny. I just dropped my wife at the airport. I don't know why this is coming back to me right now, yeah. But I do remember that call. It was interesting. And that's like the cool thing about the more, especially if you're someone with a unique skill set. And so like, this isn't to like belittle myself or anything, but like, I'm not very good at much, but the things I'm good at, I'm really, really good at. And so it just so happened that the only thing I'd ever gotten really good at, which is kind of running the operations for these early stage education companies, building the education content, presenting it, everything that goes along with that. Mm-hmm. It was like apples to apples, right? Like what I had done at Lion Tutors was almost exactly what we needed to be done to lead the education at Inflection Points. Yep. And so it was kind of cool for me. It was like, didn't communicate with Pomp at all, got the attention of this guy who was helping, the Bumik guy, who I said, then I said, all right, let's come on board. We need some coaches for the program, which is one of my suggestions, is it can't be just Pomp. You need a team of coaches. They need to all be people who work in the industry. They need to have an area of expertise, and they need to do like deep dive sessions. And so like, mm-hmm. if Pomp's talking about Bitcoin mining for 10 minutes in a session, we need a Bitcoin mining series where someone who's really legit is going through and discussing this. And so they brought me on as a coach. And at first I was just hosting, this is really what I still do, is just discussion groups. And that was because of the need that I had was, from my perspective, like selfishly, I'm like, I just want other people to talk to about Bitcoin. And so they basically brought me on to do that. I ended up mm-hmm. taking on way more. And so again, that's another thing that a lot of people who do really well have in common is you get brought in to do one very narrow thing. And then you realize there are a bunch of other things that you can do, a bunch of different hats that you can wear. And so you just go ahead and do it. And so that's always, yep. that's like, and again, all this stuff is like stuff we all kind of know, but it does bear, like it is worth repeating. And so basically came in to do this kind of very narrow thing, ended up taking on a bit more. And then eventually Pomp was just like, hey, what do you do full time? What's your job situation? Like, let's have a conversation about it. And so it was one of these things of, you know, I mean, he'll be the first person to tell you, he's a very decisive person. So we got on and he basically knew exactly what he wanted and said, mm-hmm. what would it take for you to make this leap? I told him, and then that was it. Like it was as simple and it was as straightforward as that. But like we had known each other now, we had worked together for several months at this point, and like okay. he understood the type of person I am and the type of work that I do and the kind of the types of stuff that I can do. And so that's like the cool part about, you know, building these relationships and offering value is they know the way that you think, they know the type of person that you are. Are you someone that shows up when you say you're going to? Are you someone who under promises over delivers? Like all of the stuff, it makes it super easy. And so like there wasn't an interview process because we spent like multiple months just getting to know each other, and that's right. this is essentially like this long interview process, right?
Gotcha. Yeah.
And so yeah, that was it. So yeah, if you think about it, like we first got to know them, let's call it in February. I don't know exactly when it was. And so you figure like March, April, May, June, July, I was helping out part-time. I still had my gig at Lion Tutors. That was my primary focus. But this started taking up more and more of my time and more of my attention. I just kept taking on more and more and more. And then, you know, around it must have been around September, October, we started having these conversations. And then I finally made the full leap in, it was November 21, because it was like when Bitcoin was, crazy, whatever.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, it's a unique situation, but I've seen a ton of other people have similar paths. That's not the most common, but the people who do have similar paths tend to do really well because you have more time to kind of get to know each other and determine whether or not it's like a really good fit.
Yeah. And I think your story and your experience is really a playbook for anyone job seeking now in the Bitcoin industry. Just to break it down real quick, essentially what you did was you tested out this product, right? You figured mm-hmm. out where it can be improved, and you use your existing skill set to improve upon it, offered it to them with no expectations of return. And then after that, that's how you kind of got your foot in the door. And then you got to work with them more closely, took on more mm-hmm. work over time, And it finally got to the point where it was like, okay, let's hop on a call and see if this makes sense for a full-time role. So
yeah, exactly. And then the only thing was like no expectations, but you best believe I was going to be sure that somebody saw that thing. I don't care if they tell me that it sucked. So there was that like weird period of like, I just didn't hear back from anyone for like a week or two. And so I could have just been like, ah, you know what, they're probably not interested. But so it turned out that I was just, you know, weird stuff that happens. I had the wrong email address, or he had two Slack accounts or something. And so there was an extra added bit of like, all right, you're definitely going to at least see this, and you can tell me it sucks if you think it sucks, but like, you know, let me know. So yeah, but otherwise you nailed it. That's pretty much it.
Got it. Okay. And walk me through now, what does the company look like? From what I understand, there's like three different business buckets and they kind of all intertwine together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's changed a lot. And so, and it's still changing a lot, really. So you can kind of think of it as Job Marketplace was first. And so that's Pomp Crypto Jobs, very straightforward. You have people who are looking for jobs on one side, you have companies who are looking to hire people on the other side, and that's basically it. It's a very simple product. That was first. The training program, so like the retail training program, you can think of it as Crypto Academy. So it's individuals who want to transition into a job in Bitcoin or crypto if they choose, which we can talk about kind of the way I see the difference there and stuff. They go through, and our goal is really threefold with that. Help people get jobs. That's the big one. Secondary to that, and it's like they're not unrelated, is help people make friendships, connections within the industry, and like create a space for people to exchange ideas, which is really huge. And like so they're very related, but they are two separate things. And then the third is just help people work their way up that learning curve. And so we have a lot of people who are completely new to the space. They don't know the difference between Bitcoin and crypto. They're completely disoriented. And so just giving them what we hope is a really high signal and say, like, hey, let's get you started. And let's take like what would probably take you 6-8 months on your own. Like, let's get you up that part of the learning curve, at least so you have your orientation and you can basically choose where you want to focus.
Right.
And so that's the Crypto Academy program. We're still running that. It's still doing great. We do it in a cohort-based model, which is kind of cool. For anyone who's like building products, it's an amazing thing because we do the 3-week program. We all meet up as a team. We say like, all right, what can be improved? What did we do wrong? What did we do well? And then you improve and kind of iterate that way. So it's cool. And so we're about to head in. Like I guess it'll probably be around the time this comes out, like the 19th cohort. And so we're still pumping these out. And so that's originally what the training program is. And so I lead all the education stuff for Inflection Points. Anything education related, I lead that. And we've spent more time over the past year, year and a half on like, you can call it the enterprise side. And so businesses of all types, so Bitcoin crypto companies, law firms, traditional finance firms, technology companies, whatever, where their employees touch Bitcoin or crypto in some way, we actually go into their organizations and do training for them. So a bunch of different stuff. So that's where I've spent probably in the past year or year and a half, more of my time even. And so we have the job marketplace, then you have the training. There's kind of like the two parts there to the training. We have a recruiting business called Proof of Talent. So they kind of operate as their own entity, but they fall within Inflection Points. And so it's, I guess, a competitor to you guys, right? But not really, right? As we can talk more about, Bitcoin's different than crypto. And so we have Proof of Talent. And then more recently, Reflexivity Research, which is Will Clemente's business that he co-founded Pomp. That falls underneath Inflection Points. Sorry, someone's knocking on my door, but they're gonna have to wait. Reflexivity, and then there's some other things, and we're constantly iterating and growing and changing, but that's kind of like an overview of the business. And so if you really think about it, it's like, all right, let's help people get jobs in the industry. If people are already in the industry in some way, let's make sure that they got their bearings and they kind of understand like what's what. And then on the research side, it's related. It's like, all right, like, you know, organizations that are kind of in the industry, let's make sure that they have some good information. That's what Will leads. So.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I think it's an amazing business model. They all kind of play together there. I'm curious about your day to day. So I have this belief, and I think it's basically true across the industry that every Bitcoin company is also an education company. So you need to be thinking about how to educate new customers or people that are already Bitcoiners how to use your product, et cetera. From that lens of Bitcoin education, what's your day-to-day like as an educator in this space, and how do you differ between crypto and Bitcoin?
Yeah, this is a really good question. And it's something that I think you and I have spent a lot of time talking about, and something I've spent a lot of time thinking about.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a Bitcoiner for like through and through. I am unique in the fact that I never had a shitcoin phase. It's just something that anytime that I thought somewhat deeply about it, none of it made any sense to me. And I think it was also like a timing thing. Like, you know, I was interested, I was paying attention to what was happening with the block size wars kind of on Reddit and stuff. But when I really fell down the rabbit hole, bullish case for Bitcoin, the Bitcoin standard, and then like everything from there was kind of where I went. So like, luckily I avoided it. I'm a Bitcoiner, and as you know, many people who have gone through the program, I've taken them from like the degen shitcoin world and funneled them into the Bitcoin world, which we can talk more about.
That's my favorite part. You're like a Trojan horse for Bitcoin.
That's right. Yeah. I'm orange pilling these fools. And yeah. So, but it's Crypto Academy, right? And so I think that the way I see it, and this is going to be like oversimplifying, but it'll at least provide us a place to start, is there's really two philosophies for Bitcoiners. There's one which ends up giving people like a religious understanding of things almost. And so if you think about like a lot of the class of 2020 Bitcoiners, they have this, they're assholes for no reason, whatever. And it's like, Bitcoin is the truth. I only eat meat. You got to be toxic. But it's like, why? They're like, just cause. And so it's like a religious perspective. And so I think the way that a lot of them got there is because there's so much content and there's so many people that have done the hard work and thinking from first principles for themselves, and they've shared their ideas. They aren't doing that work. They're just adopting the ideology of those people.
Right.
And so you have someone for very good reason saying Bitcoin is the only thing that is important. Everything else is a shitcoin. If you mess around those DeFi ecosystems and you're chasing yield, you're going to get scammed. The rehypothecation is dangerous.
Sure.
All true. But if that's all that you hear and you just repeat those things and you say like, I'm toxic and, you know, whatever, it's not really good. Like, you end up approaching things from a religious perspective. And so that's one way. I just don't agree with it. I get it. My way is like, all right, let's have really long discussions with a group of people who come from all over the spectrum. And so, like I said, we've had 2,500 people or so go through this thing. Mm-hmm. Every type of person you can imagine. People who are like hardcore Bitcoin maximalists, have a technical background, they've been around for 5+ years, they really know their shit, to someone who loves speculating on NFTs. They bought some crazy NFT really early and it went up in value and they think they're a genius and they day trade.
Right.
And so my philosophy is like, let's get these people in a room virtually together and let's have a conversation and let's try to figure out where we have common ground, where we disagree, where we agree. And so like our philosophy is, instead of being like crypto is a scam, all that other stuff is bullshit, being like, hey, this is what all of these things are. This is how they work. This is basically what's going on behind the hood. This is what decentralization is. These are the trade-offs that other protocols make. If you look at something like Bitcoin versus something like Ethereum versus something like Solana versus something like Binance Smart Chain, you can actually look at the different components of all of these things, and you can see for yourself why a lot of this other stuff doesn't make any sense. And so our goal is always like, let's have a discussion from first principles, and then you can make whatever decision that you want. And there are a lot of people who spend hours with me, and I'm explaining the decentralization trilemma, and I'm going over what it actually means for a pre-mine, and I explain what happened with the DAO hack, and I go through all of this stuff for hours, and we have debates, and they go like, nah, but like, I like my shitcoin, like this thing's going to moon, so like I'm gonna be over here. That's totally fine, right? And it's a big industry, and we have a lot of people who've gone through, and they work for crypto companies, and they're incredibly happy, and they're working on something that they really believe in. That's cool. We're all individuals. Like, who the hell am I to tell people what they should and shouldn't be interested in? And so I think something that we've done a really good job of was like, hey, this is the facts. This is the way that things work. Here's my opinion. And so like being very clear, and you've spent a lot of time with us as a guest speaker and stuff. It's like we separate those two things. And so for me, Bitcoin is very different than crypto. And I think that in large part, Bitcoin's once in a multi-century innovation up there with the, I mean, I would say Bitcoin's arguably a bigger innovation than the internet itself, right? Surrounded by a bunch of things that are scam-like or outright scams, all surrounding this thing and muddying the waters and making it more confusing for everyone. Right. That's my personal belief. And like, I'm very comfortable at this point explaining how I've gotten to that belief and debating people if it comes up and whatever. And so that's the philosophy. And like the way that the internet works is when someone gets into crypto, Pomp is one of the first people they find. And so I love the fact that, you know, I've had a lot of freedom to kind of help develop the content in a way where we can teach a lot of people about Bitcoin early on and avoid them a lot of the pain. And so there's been a ton of people who avoided a lot of catastrophic loss from things like Luna and other things because they were in conversations with you know, everyone else that has gone through.
Yeah, I really like that approach. The reality is it's more of a top of funnel idea. So you're getting people in there already interested in crypto more broadly. Now it's just kind of showing them why Bitcoin's the outlier here and why they should
be. Yeah, and they got to get there for themselves.
Sure.
Right? It's like if in a personal relationship, think about with your fiance, right?
Right.
If you have a scenario, you really want to do something and you say like, hey, I really want to do this and we're doing this and like no questions asked. Or if you go like, wouldn't it be interesting if we did this? Oh, no. And then she goes, no, I actually like that idea. And then she gets there herself. You don't have to do any of the work. People need to get to where they're going to go themselves. That's the bottom line for me.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I actually think in terms of Bitcoin adoption, it might be the better route to go about that way. Like get all the people in the crypto bucket, convince them, help them understand that Bitcoin's different and help them in the Bitcoin journey rather than finding someone off the street brand new, doesn't know anything about crypto or Bitcoin and try to convert them into Bitcoiners. So you're kind of sitting in the middle there. And I think, approaching education and adoption in a very unique way. And I think it's been panning out here over the last couple of years. I want to also talk about, the business also works both with crypto companies and Bitcoin companies. What are the major differences between the two?
That's a good question. What are the major differences between Bitcoin and crypto companies? Well, I think I'd add a third category. So I think that there is really a divide. And like, I think you sit really on like the edge of this of Bitcoin only. Like, I think that in the past, what is it, year and a half, 2 years, like that's really become much more established. And so, and you know, a lot of these guys and work with them, like 1031 is a Bitcoin only VC, Trammell Ventures, Bitcoin only VC. You have Bitcoin Talent Co. It's a Bitcoin only recruiting firm. Like these really didn't exist 2 years ago. Right. And so like, especially with the FTX nonsense and especially with the Luna nonsense and Celsius and BlockFi and all of these crazy things, like there has definitely become much more of a divide. And so we've kind of seen that happen, over time. And so that's the first thing I'll say. The second thing I'll say is I'd actually classify it into three buckets. I would say you have Bitcoin-only companies, you have crypto companies, and then you have everybody else from, let's call it the traditional world, where they're trying to figure out how crypto is going to impact their businesses. Mm-hmm. And so the interesting thing here is it really depends on the leadership for a lot of these organizations. A lot of them, just like individuals, need to go through the phase of coming to grips with everything. And so if you look at some really big corporations, none that we work with, and don't worry, I won't name names, their big thing is like, how do we make money from this now? And well, how do you make, you know, if you're a massive corporation, how do you make money from this hype now? NFTs, crypto tokens, decentralized, this and that. And so, like, I think the education piece is really important for these more traditional companies that are trying to figure out, like, what is this crypto thing? How are we going to be involved? Is it something that we should be paying attention to? And so that's been really interesting to see the attitudes. And it's a really difficult problem to solve. Like, you can have world-class educators coming in and giving presentations. Like, if people are oriented to not, if they're not there yet, it's just a time thing. And you need to be out there sharing these ideas, and you need to have people who are putting out great content. But like I said, everyone, including corporations, because corporations are just groups of individuals, they need to get there themselves. But, you know, the difference, it, just to go back to your like questions, is everything that you would think. Attitudes, right? So like from an engineering perspective, Bitcoin companies, much more careful, much more long-term thinking, much lower time preference, whereas a lot of the crypto companies, hype-based, move fast, break things, ideology, like anything I would say is stuff that is probably already intuitive to us. I definitely see that. The one thing I will say is I'm friends with a lot of people who are into crypto, and they work for these companies, and they genuinely believe in what it is that they're doing. And so there are bad actors for sure. And there are people who understand the pump and dump and the dump part on retail. And that's for sure. But a lot of the individuals, the people who, if you're a product manager at one of these companies, or you're in marketing for one of these companies, they genuinely believe it. And so, I think that's an interesting piece too.
Yeah, definitely. Thinking about that third bucket you brought up too, being, I know Bitcoin Talent Co., one of our core thesis is that every company that's not even touching Bitcoin right now, just operating in the world, will eventually become a Bitcoin company, whether that's holding Bitcoin in their treasury, they're paying their employees in Bitcoin, whatever it may be, and however they touch Bitcoin. I guess my question would be, how do you see that evolving over time? How can someone listening right now that's in a fiat job, considers themselves a Bitcoiner, how can they go into their own organization and start convincing them to use Bitcoin in whatever capacity makes sense for their business from an education perspective?
I think just being willing to be that person and knowing that you're going to get shut. Yeah, just being the Bitcoin guy. Like we've all been the Bitcoin guy. I'm curious because I think if I remember correctly, like you kind of tweeting some about this lately. Like I think it's just a time thing. I think it's with the adoption of new technology, things can only happen so quickly. And so again, like when you're thinking about institutions and when you're thinking about corporations, I think of it as like as above, so below. And so whatever happened to each of us as an individual, it's just on a larger time frame and it's way more complex and there are a ton more moving parts when it comes to corporations. And so just like the first time when my buddies who were involved with the pyramid scheme were trading, day trading Bitcoin on Mt. Gox, drinking Ciroc. And I'm like, this thing's a scam because I know it all and whatever. And I had to spend a lot more time with these ideas. Like the same is true for these corporations. The other thing is just like realizing, especially with Wall Street, how the stuff works. It's like when you have a big Wall Street personality, any of them who've come out, you know, to support Bitcoin, it de-risks it, right? And so being the first to stand out is really difficult.
Yeah,
I think when we saw, I think we didn't realize how unique Michael Saylor and MicroStrategy were, right? And like we're like, corporations are coming. Bitcoin's going to be this treasury reserve asset. It's going to be on every corporation's balance sheet. Like, not every corporation is Michael Saylor and the structure that they have that he has with Michael with MicroStrategy. But I still think that eventually companies are going to come to this realization. It's just a timing thing. I think as many of us have, like this ETF stuff is really interesting and just kind of watching how the market's been reacting to it in different ways. I think look, the BlackRock files for an ETF, a week later, you have five positive Bitcoin articles in Forbes, who's never written a positive Bitcoin article about Forbes, right?
Right.
And so I think that just continuing to be the Bitcoin guy, continuing to educate yourself about Bitcoin, condense your learnings, and then share them to the extent that you're comfortable is the biggest thing that each of us can do. Mm-hmm. New technologies take time to kind of work themselves out in people's minds. And so I think that just like take whatever you're good at, contribute. So obviously highest leverage is if you can build software products and you're a designer and you can build a company that adds value to the space, like that's amazing. Most of us, like maybe not most of us, a lot of us, that isn't true, right? Mm-hmm. Figure out like, what are you somewhat uniquely suited to do and just like keep chipping away at it.
Yeah, I completely agree. What's one piece of actionable advice then someone listening right now can do today to start, I don't know, working on something Bitcoin related and eventually work full time in the space?
Put some out there. Like it's different for everyone. So for me, writing is, and I know that you, I mean, we've been friends for long enough where like, I know daily habit for you, right? Notebook mm-hmm. and your writing. Yeah, like for me, it's really difficult. Like I have my journal, nothing good comes, like I kind of stink at writing. And I wouldn't feel comfortable putting my writing out there. That's just mm-hmm. the way it is. Your mm-hmm. writing is a lot better than me. So writing is not good for me. Don't love Twitter. I think that for me, I have a very addictive personality, and so I end up consuming way too much. I try to shitpost, and like when I think something funny, put it out there, but Twitter's not good. Guess what? I can sit in a room and talk about Bitcoin for basically an unlimited amount of time. That's what works for me. So I do a lot of that. Create space for people to have a discussion about Bitcoin, record it, put it on the internet. Boom. That's what works for me. And so I think for anyone, it's like, experiment, but find something that you can do to condense what you're learning about Bitcoin and put it out there. Don't be alone. Don't be a consumer only. If you're only consuming ideas, you're not making nearly as much progress as you think you are. Just because mm-hmm. you can repeat what you heard whoever Bitcoin influencer say on a podcast doesn't mean that you understand that thing. So yeah. Push yourself outside of your comfort zone, whether it's writing, whether it's having discussions with someone who's annoying like me, and I go, but why? Have you ever thought about this? Are you sure you actually believe that? Because guess what? Mm-hmm. You'll realize very quickly that the stuff that you think you understand, you're just kind of repeating what someone else said. And so condense your ideas and then share them, which is the difficult part. But do that for an extended period of time in whatever format is best for you, and then make friends with other Bitcoiners and share that stuff, as uncomfortable as it feels. Yeah. And because what that's going to allow is for really two things is someone who you meet eventually is going to figure out the type of person you are, which I think is the least intuitive part. Like if you've written a daily newsletter every single day for a year, you are a specific type of person. You just are. And then the way that you think, like, does this person have a set of personal values that aligns with mine and with my company's mission? And so I think that's a really big thing that separates Bitcoin companies from the rest, is how much of a focus in the interview process there is on do you have a view of the world that aligns with mine? Even with like the crypto companies, it's less important. It's like, are you a good product manager? Whereas with the Bitcoin-only companies, it's like, are you a Bitcoiner? Oh, can you figure out how to do a good job in this product management role?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and so I think that's it. And like, this is my advice to myself too. It's just like, I need to constantly remind myself to just like, I'm doing the work already and I'm trying to make sense of all of this. Just share it, even though it's like suck. Like, I don't like the way it feels, but just do it. So yeah, I guess that would be it.
It does take a little bit at first. It's uncomfortable to put your thoughts, ideas, and your work out there. But the reality is there's so many benefits associated with it and built mm-hmm. up over time, doing it consistently. So no better advice to do exactly what Kenny said there. One more question before we wrap this up here. Where mm-hmm. do you see the future of work? My thesis is kind of turning into, we're going to see less full-time employees and we're going to see mm-hmm. more contract work. And take it one step further, Bitcoin now enables payment for work globally, right? With no barriers.
Yeah.
Anyone can set up an Augustorial wallet, accept Bitcoin or Lightning payments for their work, whether it be, I don't know, a 3-month project or even a 1-week project. Yeah, how do you see that evolving with Bitcoin in the picture?
I see it being massive. And like, I think that with any prediction, you know, there's two things. It's the what's going to happen. I think a lot of us as Bitcoiners are very convicted in the fact that we're fairly confident that the way that we see the future unfolding is the way that the future is going to unfold. I think timing is like the most difficult part. I go back and forth on like a daily basis of, I think things are going to take way longer than we all think. And then I go like, holy shit, this stuff's going to unfold really quickly. And so it's the Parker Lewis idea, right? Gradually, then suddenly. And just the timing component of it is really interesting. But with taking all of that out of it, Bitcoin and then the Lightning Network enables just so much in terms of individuals who have a skill set to earn an income from anywhere throughout the world. And it really makes it really interesting. It's like the number, one of my good friends I've met through the program is from India, and just like the number of incredibly talented, technical, really, really intelligent people coming from out of India is just mind blowing. You can't even begin to wrap your mind around it. And so the fact that people from places in the world like India and many other places can now create value, receive that value instantly for free on an ongoing basis. And so it's not, hey, you do this thing for me for 2 weeks and then I'm going to pay you at the end of 2 weeks. It's something as we've talked about, me and you privately, is like, it can be as like literally every single minute that you're creating this value for me, you can receive Bitcoin. And then I think another part of it that me and you both agree on, and that I'm sure most people that we have a conversation with would agree on, is I think a lot of people are going to benefit from using Bitcoin without ever knowing that they're using Bitcoin. And so another friend of mine, someone who went through the program, started this company called GetBit.Money. Mm-hmm. And so the easiest way to understand it, it's a little bit different than this, but it's Strike for India. And so Strike Send Globally feature is actually built using in collaboration with GetBit.Money.
Okay.
And so what it allows you to do is take my cell phone, have an Indian phone number. I have dollars or Bitcoin, so I can use it from any Bitcoin wallet or Strike where I have dollars sitting in. I have the Indian phone number. I can send them value across the world, and it shows up in their Indian bank account as rupees. And so this becomes really interesting now, because now you have people who are benefiting from this final instant settlement that's nearly for free, but they're receiving it in their native currency and they don't know any difference. And so I think that is really interesting. I saw our friend Cody Lowe, who I actually haven't chatted with in a while. I want to check in and say what's up with him, but he did a demo, and like Arthur Hayes retweeted it and stuff of ChatGPT and AI, and like, okay, well, what if machine to machine Bitcoin is what they're using to settle? And, you know, what if, we already have value for value in podcasting, and like, I'm never signing up for the Wall Street Journal, or I'm never going to have a New York Times subscription, but sometimes there are things on those platforms that I want to read. And so instead of like, hey, even though it's like $5 or whatever, it's like, I'm not doing that. Like, just, it won't happen. But if it's like, hey, you know, zap me 100 sats and then you can do this, like, it's perfect. And so like, I think a lot of like Web3 is going to end up being built on top of the Lightning Network and layers above that. But I think we all think that. I think it's like easy to say. It's a matter of people who are way smarter than me, you know, how is that going to get built? But man, it's fucking exciting, isn't it?
Ah, dude, I think we're on the forefront here of not only like payment technology, but also how our society is structured, right? So just in terms of jobs, and the last question I asked, to simplify it here, I think Bitcoin enables more access to a broader talent pool, whether that be those living in developing nations like India, all that talent there, or even artificial intelligent talent, right? And it's kind of constrained with Bitcoin, and these tools are being built out right now so that we can access this global labor market and make amazing products for a fraction of the price. So I personally think that the job structure that we've typically known, where it's like you work 40 hours a week. I think that'll completely change in our lifetime here. And Bitcoin will play a pivotal role in it too.
Let me ask real quick, because I'm curious. Remote work, you like it? You don't like it? What do you have no opinion?
I think the most ideal setup is to do like 2 days in the office and the other 3 days maybe at home. Especially working, when I was working at Bitcoin Magazine, you know, that company's culture being all Bitcoiners, man, I wanted to be in the office, even though I didn't live in the headquarters in Nashville. Whenever I'd go there, man, it was such a good time. I felt like I was at home, didn't feel like I was at work. So yeah, if I could do a hybrid of that, it'd be great. But overall, there's no going back now. I just see it increasingly becoming more remote work, more remote focused. So
yeah, just curious.
Yeah. Well, cool, man. I'll wrap up there. We're on the hour. So thank you so much for your time today. Thank you for giving all your insights here on Bitcoin jobs and your career path as well, getting into the industry. Where can guests find you online and get in touch with you?
Yeah. Thank you, brother. I will say at the risk of making you feel embarrassed, I am very proud of you. It's been amazing to see you. I mean, we've known each other for a long time now, and so it's just been incredible to see you grow and develop and go after what it is that you want and fail and then succeed and fail and succeed. And I'm rooting for you, man, and you're a great person. So I just wanted to say that. And it's just so everyone else knows.
Appreciate you.
Yeah, of course. And then find me on Twitter. It's at KennyD21M, mostly shit posts. Yeah, pretty much exclusively shitposts, but follow me.
Yeah, and if you're someone that's into crypto and want to understand why Bitcoin's a little different, maybe sign up for the Kenny's crypto course as well, or Pomp's crypto course, and Kenny will be your coach.
That's right. All right, man, this is awesome. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I'll talk to you later. See you, bro.
Bye.
Hey, guys, thanks for listening, and I really hope you found value in this podcast. If you're a job seeker looking to work for a Bitcoin company, or you're a part of a Bitcoin company and need help with finding talent for your team, please head over to our website at www.bitcointalent.co and get in touch with our team. Thanks, until next time.